The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Touch Al-Aqsa, we will wreak havoc. We will open the doors of Jahannam. Ya bin Haywan, you attack Al-Aqsa. Al-Aqsa, we'll do World War III so we can liberate it from you.
Israel will fall.
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 Palestine will never die.
Well, there you go. That's a world on edge. And I think as one of the headlines in our stack put it, the one form of racism that still is just fine, that would be a hatred for Jews, anti-Semitism. On the rise, all of these protests around the world. We've got an article title from PJ Media, Men Give Birth, America Was Founded in 1619, and Israel is the Aggressor. Just another day in the news cycle. All of these lies. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you know you can reach us at td@kpcg.fm. And of course, you can get to this program every day at our website, thetrumpet.com, thetrumpet.com/live. And if you see underneath the video player, there's also a backup player, just in case you have trouble with the feed. And then also you can get to quite a few of the programs that we've had over the past several weeks, all the archives, and you can see the titles there with each individual video. So that's at thetrumpet.com/live. So much to get to on today's program. I mentioned last week that this was a big day with respect to the recount in Arizona, and also that judicial ruling in Michigan. Antrim County. I don't have too much to report on that, but perhaps we'll have more to say on that tomorrow. But we will have an update on the fighting that's going on in Maricopa County over the forensic audit. And also we've got quite a lot more, as we do, it seems, every day on the scamdemic. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. But coming back to this war in the Middle East, the back and forth between the Israelis and Hamas and Fatah. I think just stepping back and looking at the prophetic implications of this. Melanie Phillips, a few days ago, she brought out quite a few things that I think, as Brent put it, it's almost like that this was written for thetrumpet.com. She makes quite a few of the same points that we've made. Not just recently, but in years past as well, with respect to Barack Obama, his hatred, his contempt for Israel. We saw that for 8 years. And of course, this, as she says, even in the end of her article, this is like Obama's third term, really. She says here, might Biden be turning America into Israel's foe? What is happening here? You had this close relationship during the administration of Donald Trump, and now the fake presidency gets in there after the election steal, and you've got Biden out front, but you've got the puppet master working from behind. It says here, does this sound, well, first it talks about this third term of Obama, I mentioned that, but how that Joe Biden has dispatched the American official Haiti Amir, and we talked some about the background there, as she does here in a few paragraphs. But Melanie says, does this sound like someone who can broker peace between Palestinians firing thousands of rockets to murder Israelis and the targets of that onslaught? Further on, it says, the possibility now looms large of a major breakdown in relations between Israel and the United States. A major breakdown. And of course, we know prophetically, we know from the prophet Hosea that ultimately, eventually, Judah is going to reach out to Assyria, of all people, Germany. They're going to go to Germany for help and for security. And of course, that won't work out well for the Israelis in the end. It says here, the evidence suggests something far worse here than a naive attachment to the two-state solution, for the underlying logic, incredible as it may seem, is that it would suit the Biden administration for Israel to lose. And this is all to do with Barack Obama and Iran. She takes us back to the Obama administration and its desire from the beginning in 2009 to empower Iran, the number one state sponsor of terror. Melanie Phillips says here, behind the Palestinians sits Iran, and in the shadows behind Iran sits America, of all things. America's in the shadows, working behind the scenes, just like they did during the Obama years, to empower the Islamist state of Iran, to empower the number one state sponsor of terrorism. Could it really be that the Biden administration is turning America into an active foe of Israel? She says the suggestion sounds as incredible as it is fearsome, but it starts to appear all too credible as Biden's domestic agenda lurches even further into self-destructive radicalism and America turns into a foe of itself. A war against America. We've had this article from Victor Davis Hanson in my notes for days now. I haven't been able to get to it. He just goes down a bullet point list of all of these hallmarks of communism and then shows how it's happening in the United States of America. Who told you about that back in the 1950s and 60s? The communist infiltration. You can read about it, and he was right. That booklet, the size of a magazine, with Mr. Armstrong on the cover. It says here, Obama's hostility to Israel made his double-term presidency a nightmare for the Jewish state. But if that was bad enough, it will take a measure of strategic genius for Israel to defend itself against Obama's surrogate third term and to keep its people safe. Obama's surrogate third term. Well, you've heard that on this program since the beginning of this year. He's the one running the show. It's certainly not the fake President Biden. And the media, they're all in on it. The media, they're complicit. PJ Media, this article I mentioned about all these lies. It says, when you meditate for a moment on what the left expects honest and decent people to believe, you confront the world of absurdities and lies in which we live. The left demands that we believe and announce men menstruate and give birth, and that it is in no way unfair to girls and women when biological men compete in girls and women's sports. It talks about the 1619 Project, how that's made its way into millions of schools. And young people are being taught that that was America's founding then, when that first ship full of slaves, indentured servants, comes over to what would become America well over a century later. That's the real beginning. Slavery is the beginning. This is what young people are being taught. And then she says here, or rather, I'm not sure who wrote this PJ Media piece, but it says, and now with Hamas, a totalitarian theocratic Islamist terror group, unleashing thousands of rockets on Israel's civilian population, and Israel responding to this latest of repeated attempts at mass murder, the world's left demands that we believe Israel is the villain and Hamas is the victim. It says the left's condemnation of Israel and sympathy for Hamas is just another example of the morally inverted world the left has constructed. It's Isaiah 5 and verse 21. A morally inverted world, an upside down world. It says we live in a world in which the mass media and academia, all nothing more than mouthpieces of the left, repeatedly tell the world that America fought the Revolutionary War in order to preserve slavery, and that men menstruate, and that Hamas is a victim of Israeli aggression. And on it goes. The lies, they're exposed daily on this program, as you well know. Wall Street Journal had a piece. I took you through some of the history leading up to this conflict between the Hamas terrorists and Israel. I went through that last week on the program. This piece from the Wall Street Journal, almost nothing you've heard about evictions in Jerusalem is true. We went through some of that history, the dispute over this land, and how that initially the Palestinians, they were the ones that lived in these seven residences. They actually won in the Israeli court. But the court said, all right, if you're going to stay there, though, you have to pay rent. They refused to do it. And now it's looking like it might be possible. It might be possible that they get evicted. Squatters getting evicted. And like the journal points out, almost nothing you've heard about these evictions is true. What you're hearing is just a nonstop, steady diet of lies. There was this article, Sam noted this yesterday, this article from The Atlantic in 2014, circulating through social media over the weekend, what the media gets wrong about Israel. And it talks just to, even about the reporting that comes out of Israel. There's all these journalists, most of them are in Jerusalem. Most of them live on the Israeli dominant side. But there's a few exceptions. AP has an office in Gaza. And this piece from 2014 just exposes the lies perpetuated by the Associated Press. And as you know, if you know anything about news gathering in the United States, it's a lot of these local publications and newspapers that pick up AP stories and run them in their publications. They were outraged, the media, last week when a building was bombed by the IDF that had contained, I believe it was some journalists. And as is the custom with Israel, they always give a warning. They say, look, there's bombs being fired from here, missiles coming out of this location. We're going to blow it up. We're going to take it out. Who does that? They go out of their way, Israel does, to avoid civilian casualties. Hamas, meanwhile, they're just firing indiscriminately. All of these missiles, hundreds of them, thousands of them, firing them into southern Israel, even into the middle of Israel, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, those large population centers. This article, listen to this, though. It says, I think this is a quote. It says this from that Atlantic piece from 2014. The AP staff in Gaza City would witness, and again, this goes back several years ago, but it just talks about how the AP operates. The AP staff in Gaza City would witness a rocket launch right beside their office, endangering reporters and other staff, or rather other civilians nearby, and the AP wouldn't report it. Not even in AP articles about Israeli claims that Hamas was launching rockets from residential areas. It says, this happened. This happened. The AP was right there witnessing it, even. And yet when the IDF or Israel would make those claims, the AP wouldn't come and support it. They wouldn't even tell the truth. They just concealed it. It says Hamas fighters would burst into the AP's Gaza bureau and threaten the staff, and the AP wouldn't report it. This happened. They'd come in and threaten the AP journalists, and that would be covered up. It says cameramen waiting outside Shifa Hospital in Gaza City would film the arrival of civilian casualties and then, as a signal from an official, turn off their cameras when wounded and dead fighters, the terrorists in other words, when wounded and dead fighters came in, helping Hamas maintain the illusion that only civilians were dying. The Atlantic from 2014 said this too happened. The information comes from multiple sources with firsthand knowledge of these incidents. So, I mean, and this is worse than just being a terrorist sympathizer. These are journalists working at the Associated Press, aiding and abetting the terrorist cause, carefully framing the narrative so that you're led to believe it's just civilian casualties, just little children, women and children. Turn off the cameras when the Hamas fighters, the wounded Hamas fighters, are brought into the hospital. You can't show that to the world. You can't make it seem like Israel actually hit its target. You're certainly not going to expose the fact that these monsters are using children as human shields. That kind of barbaric thinking, that kind of barbaric strategy, military strategy, if you can even call it that, that's actively covered up by your friends in the Associated Press. These people are corrupt through and through. They hate America, just like Hamas does. They hate Israel. It's fine to hate the Jews. That kind of racism, that's okay in our modern world. So sensitive to anything that might be construed as racist. And then look at these demonstrations. Some of them, one in North London over the weekend, on a loudspeaker, saying, rape the women and children in Israel. Rape these Jews. Rape their wives. Rape their daughters. Yeah, that's going on in the streets of London. I wonder what kind of an investigation there will be into that. I wonder how many people will be arrested for that sort of hate speech. Can you imagine it in any other setting or context? Or if it was aimed at any other people other than the Jews? The British authorities would never tolerate it. But because it's Jew hatred, it's okay. You get one angry tweet from the Prime Minister. What else? What else? What kind of action is going to be taken? This world's about to explode in violence. Look at the active hand that the media have in deceiving, in promoting false narratives, and then they're never, ever held to account. Of course Hamas is going to take their missile launchers and put them up next to a media building or a hospital or a residential area. That's how that they know they'll win the war. As long as they can get the media, like Associated Press, out there helping them frame the narrative, then they'll win. You could see by the demonstrations worldwide. All these people on the side of the terrorists, including Associated Press. There was a story in the New York Times that basically, I won't get into it, it's a pretty lengthy piece here, but it's just basically exposing that Christopher Steele, the one that came up with the Steele dossier that was used to then spy on Donald Trump. The New York Times, 5 years on, is now exposing Christopher Steele as a fraud. Sam and I are reading this, trying to figure out, well, what are they even trying to get at here? Why are they even discussing this? I mean, the lie went on for years. And here comes the New York Times self-righteously saying, well, you know, there's this side of it, and they're kind of in cahoots with the media, and there's these deep state actors. I don't think it used the word deep state. But this author, his name is Barry Meyer, he said this, Mr. Steele sold his, well, let me skip further on. As I said, I don't have time to read a lot of this. It says, beneath the dossier's journey from media obsession to slush pile lies a broader and more troubling story. Today, private spying has boomed into a renegade billion-dollar industry, one that is increasingly invading our privacy, profiting from deception and manipulating the news. Well, why weren't you writing about this 5 years ago? Why do you care about it now all of a sudden? Now we want honesty in journalism. Now we want to expose these frauds. Meyer says, while I was examining the private intelligence business, it became clear that I needed to look at another profession, the one where my career had been spent, journalism. He says, reporters and private investigators long have had a symbiotic relationship that is hidden from the public. Hired spies feed journalists story tips or documents and use reporters to plant stories benefiting a client without leaving their fingerprints behind. It says the information they peddle is often sensational. It can also be impossible to verify or be untrue. I mean, this is all that was going on in 2016, 2017, 18. It continued through the Mueller investigation. All of it, a total fraud, a hoax. And here comes the New York Times saying, well, you know, it is kind of a booming industry, fake news. And I guess I do have to kind of look at my own industry, this journalist says. And this symbiotic relationship that they have with spies and so on and getting lies out there into the public that people will believe. The level of corruption here, how difficult and challenging it is just to get to the truth. Truth fails, Isaiah said in Isaiah 59. Truth fails. It's cast to the ground, the prophet Daniel wrote. And meanwhile, as I said, we're fed a steady diet of this. You can hardly get to the truth in Arizona as well, the recount. As I said last week, you've got the radical left attacking the operation. But where are the conservative voices that are getting in there and eagerly reporting on what's happening there? There's a few exceptions, I guess. This is from ArizonaCentral.com. It said, I told you about the letter that the Senate president sent to the Maricopa County officials for a public hearing scheduled for this afternoon. In Arizona, I believe 1 p.m. this afternoon. Well, those county officials, they came out with a big press conference yesterday, and then they fired off a letter to these Senate Republicans, an angry one at that, and some of that letter is quoted in this news piece. It says here, the private contractors hired by Arizona Senate President Karen Fan to audit Maricopa County's general election don't know what they are doing. And the county didn't delete any election files, county officials fired back on Monday. So basically, the county officials are saying, look, the only reason there's anything missing or irregular about this is because the people you hired, they're messing it up. They're the problem. So obviously, they want no part of the hearing today, where they're called on to answer for all of these irregularities that were spelled out in this letter that was submitted by Karen Fan last week. I talked about that some on the program. It says Jack Sellers, County Board of Supervisors chairman, accused Fan of attempting to legitimize a grift disguised as an audit. So discredit the audit. It's the audit that's fraudulent, certainly not the election. It's the audit that's fraudulent, not the fact that over a four-year span from 2016 to 2020, Arizona was able to get nearly a million new voters registered. A million! It says here, he said the contractors led by Florida-based cybersecurity firm Cyber Ninjas that has hired to lead the audit despite no experience thought files were missing because they don't know what they're doing. So he blames it on Cyber Ninjas, the outfit that was brought in to help conduct the forensic audit. They went after this group. They've gone after the Republicans, the local media, even the left-wing media nationally. I've played some clips that have shown that. But it says, along with sending a technical response to the state Senate's president's questions, The supervisors unanimously approved a letter to Fan that calls on her to put an end to the audit. So they answer back with this letter demanding that Fan stop the audit. They don't answer her concerns. They don't say, well, you said this, this, and this in the letter. The only thing they say is that you're the ones messing it up and you should stop it entirely. This is a quote from the letter. It says, you, Senate President Fan, are the only one with the power to immediately end it. We implore you to recognize the obvious truth. Your auditors are in way over their heads. It's time to end this for the good of the Senate, for the good of the country, and for the good for the democratic institutions that define us as Americans. So basically they're saying this is an attack. It's an attack on America. And you've got to stop this for the good of the country. You've got to stop this. So it's the audit they want you to believe that's the problem. It's the recount they want you to believe that's illegal. It's the people conducting the audit who are corrupt. This is also from the same publication, Arizona Central. It says top Republicans in the Arizona Senate are meeting at 1 p.m. Tuesday to discuss the ongoing audit of Maricopa County's election results. So that's, as I said, later today. It says, finally, Senate leaders had invited county officials to attend, but county leaders have made clear they do not plan to participate. So they're not cooperating, not at all. Having issued a blistering rebuke to accusations by GOP senators that they deleted and mishandled election materials. So they just basically responded by saying, no, we didn't mishandle anything, and we're not going to cooperate, and you should stop the audit. But the audit continues to go forward with really, really very little support coming from conservative media or even Republicans at the national level. This is the way CNN has reported on the audit. And listen to this. This is what passes for journalism. A journalist that's led into the arena, and she, you know, everything's very dramatic. She pulls out binoculars. We can't even get close, so I have to pull out binoculars. Listen to this commentary. I mean, that's what it is. It's opinion. Camouflaged as, I guess, hard news. This is CNN from a few days ago, clip 11.
We are getting the first look ourselves.
Hey, good morning.
At the next act in the replay of the big lie.
In the press box.
That the 2020 election was stolen.
So this is the press box, and that's the floor.
The counting floor of yet another tally of the nearly 2.1 million ballots in Maricopa County from a distance. And they're keeping reporters so far away that I have to use binoculars to see. It looks like a ballot review, but look harder. And the ballots are on a lazy Susan, zooming by ballot counters. This guy in a cowboy hat, walking around with what appears to be some type of cell phone jammer. And then there's this light machine with multiple cameras.
Two of the three matching.
Ken Bennett, hired by the Republican-controlled Arizona Senate to help run this ballot review, explains why they're using it.
Is there a concern that ballots were Xeroxed?
There's always concern that we want to make sure that every ballot came from an eligible registered voter in Maricopa County, as opposed to somebody trying to introduce unauthorized ballots.
That's a conspiracy theory that ballots were somehow snuck in, leading to Donald Trump's defeat in the state last year. These types of lies resonated with ballot counters like Eloise Flagg.
That's a conspiracy theory. That's a big lie. The recount's not even done. It's not even finished. But CNN has already drawn the conclusion that this is a big lie. And it resonates with people like so-and-so. They're not even trying to be unbiased. They're not even trying to report the facts. It reminds me of a hit piece brought on this church many years ago from one of the local Fox affiliates. Even the way that they positioned the cameras around we opened the gates and let them come in and see our campus. But it was some guy that hated this church, hated God's work. And so he carefully framed it in such a way where it tried to make the church look bad. And that's what you're seeing there. She's way far away. Here there's Republican and Democrat observers down on the floor involved in the count. involved in the inspection. And I guess the same journalist would have no problem then. She has a problem with being pushed a little ways back with her binoculars. But look at what was happening on November 3rd and 4th and 5th and 6th. They couldn't even, Republican observers couldn't even get into some of those counts. It was totally one-sided. And the media for its part, well, as I say, it's going to be an interesting day and week with some of these movements in Maricopa County. This one here from Just the News, this is regarding that New Hampshire town of Windham. It says here, an audit team sent to conduct a forensic examination of the 2020 election results in Windham, New Hampshire, started the process off well enough on Tuesday, but by Wednesday, they hit a major snag. The live stream cameras that had been broadcasting the audit room around the clock went offline for close to 90 minutes, potentially obscuring any problematic intervention. It says the team decided Thursday morning to reinspect the ballot machines on camera in an attempt to maintain observers' faith in the process. They needed to determine whether the machines had been tampered with overnight when cameras mysteriously went down. It says here, with the country focused on the election audit in Maricopa County, the early headlines about election night troubles centered on cities in Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. It comes as a small surprise that the idyllic New England town of Windham, where Republicans ultimately won each of the races, now being inspected, also now finds itself under scrutiny for possible election night machine malfunction and numbers that just don't add up. The title of that piece, of course, is how that this could have implications for 2020, the presidential election as a whole. So lots to follow there. Lots, as I say, coming out of Michigan. And we'll do our best to keep tabs on some of these developing stories. Just a last section here in my notes on the ongoing news regarding face masks and, of course, the push for the vaccines. And you hear every day at the top of the hour with the feature story news rundown, more variants and when lockdowns are going to finally end in the UK or wherever else. Here in the United States, this clip from fake President Biden yesterday got some attention from conservative media. Notice what he says here, clip two.
If the unvaccinated get vaccinated, they will protect themselves and other unvaccinated people around them. If they do not, states with low vaccination rates may see those rates go up, may see this progress reversed. Ultimately, those who are not vaccinated will end up paying the price.
Those who are not vaccinated will end up paying the price. 15 days to slow the spread. And here we are on what, day 420, day 425, whatever the day is. And get the jab or else. That's the latest Trumpet magazine. Jab or else. And we talked in that issue about this push, this pressure for getting everyone vaccinated. I got into that some yesterday on the program. But listen to this article from The Telegraph. This is The Daily Telegraph in the UK. It says, members of scientific pandemic influenza group on behavior express regret about unethical methods. So here's another piece, I guess quite like the New York Times piece that concludes 5 years on that, you know what, Christopher Steele, he was a liar. We'll admit it. He was unethical. He was a fraud. Listen to this. This is coming from the scientific community. It's all about science, right? It says, scientists on a committee that encouraged the use of fear to control people's behavior during the COVID pandemic have admitted its work was unethical and totalitarian. What day are we on? Day 420? Day 425? And here come the scientists, a few of them anyway, saying, you know what? We shouldn't have tried to scare you to death. That to me, now looking back on it in hindsight, it seems like it was unethical. Unbelievable. I mean, these people should be charged with crimes and locked away, considering the impact that their scaremongering had on ordinary citizens in Britain, in the United States. It says members of the Scientific Pandemic Influenza Group regret about the tactics in a new book about the role of psychology in the government's COVID-19 response. There was a psychology role, I guess, in all of this. Okay. It says SPIB warned in March last year that ministers needed to increase the perceived level of personal threat from COVID-19 because, quote, a substantial number of people still did not feel sufficiently personally threatened. You've got to up the threat level. You've got to scare them more because there's too many people not taking this seriously enough. And you see the same mindset, the same strategy with respect to the vaccine. Well, we've got to use every means possible, even try to bribe them, as I covered yesterday. It says Gavin Morgan, a psychologist on the team, said, clearly using fear as a means of control is not ethical. Using fear smacks of totalitarianism. It's not an ethical stance for any modern government. It says, by nature, I am an optimistic person, but all this has given me a more pessimistic view of people. Well, thanks for that now. Thanks for admitting now that you scared us to death, that you scared us into lockdown. And now you try to scare us, bribe us, threaten us into taking the jab, even when people die because of it. I heard a fairly prominent doctor earlier today who said, in the end, he feels like the vaccine is going to cause more deaths here in the United States than COVID-19. Again, if you look at the statistics, as I covered yesterday, the people that die from COVID alone, it's about 6% of the actual tally, the tally that they kept running on CNN all last year. Well, we'll see if he's right. We know already, as Tucker Carlson revealed last week or a week before, it's at least 4,000 that have died. But what about the long-term impact of these vaccines? These experiments, experimental drugs, they haven't even been approved. Joe Biden acknowledged that yesterday. I forget which clip that was. I think it's clip one. Play that one.
Remember, this is the vaccine that's not authorized for use in the United States yet. So we're going to be sending it to folks once the FDA has reviewed this and said it's safe. This is all the AstraZeneca vaccine produced in the United States. All of it will be sent to other countries.
Okay, it wasn't really clear the way he expressed that, but he talked about how it's not approved. And once we get it approved, we're going to send it out to other nations as well. This is the same drug that Eric Clapton took. And he said he should have never gone near that needle. He wondered if he was going to play the guitar again. He was paralyzed, temporarily paralyzed. I mean, that's a powerful drug. That's a powerful drug. And there's the fake president on TV saying it's not even authorized yet, but as soon as we do get it authorized, we'll be distributing this drug around the world. Everyone needs to take the vaccine. This really is an incredible revelation from the Daily Telegraph. All of these scientists that are now acknowledging, yeah, you know, we did. It was a psychological ploy. We wanted to scare you, and now we do feel kind of bad about it. We do feel like it was kind of unethical. We do feel like it was a little bit of a totalitarian mindset. As I say, thanks for letting us know that now. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you want to submit some feedback, you can write us, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
Oh, my God.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I mentioned on yesterday's show how the prophet Isaiah, he's quoted more in the New Testament than any other prophet of old. He was cited by Jesus Christ and many of the other apostles in their writings as well. And so we've given you a little bit of background to this this book, this miniature Bible, as I said yesterday, the book of Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah. And so we'll just launch into the first chapter here where it says, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. I gave you some of this this timeline, this chronology, I believe on Friday's show, how Isaiah lived to about 90 years of age. He had a long ministry spanning the lives of many kings, many of the kings of Judah. And it says here, I have nourished, this is God, hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, or the Lord has spoken, for the Lord has spoken, I have nourished and brought up children, verse 2, and they have rebelled against me. Rebellious children. That's what it says right here at the start of this book. God is a family man. God, in Genesis 1, you read how God set out to reproduce himself through family, through marriage and family. And he says here, I've brought up children, but they've rebelled against me. Mr. Armstrong says this in his classic work, Mystery of the Ages. He said, it's important at the very outset of this chapter that you, this is chapter 1, I believe, that you notice God calls these humans his own children. Many people say God just doesn't seem real to me. God is a great mystery to them. Their own human fathers don't seem like a mystery. They seem real. If your physical father can seem real to you, why shouldn't God be real? And that's what Mr. Armstrong set out to do in that first chapter of Mystery of the Ages, Who and What is God? He wanted to make God as real to you and me as our own human fathers. Mystery of the Ages would be a great book to get into. Again, I know many of you have already read it and studied it. If you haven't, make sure you contact our offices and secure your free copy today. Mystery of the Ages, that first chapter, Who and What is God? Verse 3, it says, the ox knows his owner and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people does not consider. The ox knows. Mr. Armstrong, in that opening chapter of Mystery of the Ages, he talked about visiting India once and how that there were cows just roaming on the streets, and he asked the driver, so, you know, how does the owner track down these cows? And the driver said, Well, they find their way home themselves, these animals. And he immediately thought of Isaiah 1. The ox knows, the ass his master's crib, but Israel doesn't know. My children don't know. My people won't consider. It's like we're more ignorant than the animals in the field. We've rejected God and his truth. There's a built-in hostility toward God and all things of God. Romans 8 and verse 7. That, of course, comes from Satan the devil. It is Satan's nature in us that makes our human nature so hostile and antagonistic toward God. God, though, is our Father. God, if you've had your mind open to the truth, God is real. God is a Father. He's a provider. He's a comfort. He's an encourager. He forgives. He educates. He's a lawgiver. He gives us his laws so that we can lead healthy, happy, obedient, blessed lives. My father said this in an article from many years ago. God raised up a man who brought God right back into the picture. He's commenting, I believe, on Mr. Armstrong. There is no truth so important as who and what is God. But sadly, even God's own people, 95% of them, don't deeply know God. There is no truth so important as this. Who and what is God? We want to bring God right into the center of our existence, right into the center of all our activities. Certainly our education, our teaching, our training. You can read in Malachi 1 and verse 6 about the Laodiceans who dishonor their God. They didn't honor God like a son should honor his father. Verse 4, it says, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." See, the children, again, referring to Israel as a whole, God's people that have gone astray. That word, corruptors. Children that are corruptors, that means to decay or ruin or perish. That's what we are. We are ruining ourselves. We're ruining our nations. We're following, as it says in Exodus 23, we're following after a multitude to do evil. So much evil and filth. So much corruption and lies. We went through some of that just in the first segment here. Verse 5 says, "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick and the whole heart faint." It says, "From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment." There's just sores, sickness, disease, spiritually speaking, from head to toe. God compares our society, the entire society, he compares it to a sickness that fills a human body like a cancer from head to toe. That's a lot of disease. That's a terrible sickness. Verse 7 says, here's what it leads to. "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers." My father's talked about this verse quite often over the years, about the unrest that's coming, the rioting, in fact, the warring, the civil war. You put Isaiah 1:7 together with Ezekiel 4 and 5, And I mean, these are some sobering prophecies. Jesus said in the Gospels that great tribulation is coming. A tribulation so great, so horrific, the world has never seen anything like it. And look, this world has seen a lot of dreadful events. Just look at the violence and the carnage from World War II. And yet Jesus himself said, Daniel the prophet said, Jeremiah the prophet said, it's nothing like what's coming. Great tribulation, that's how it's described. Verse 8, and again, you read through these next few verses and you see why. You see why God has to resort to this. Verse 8, it says, and the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city, except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. A very small, except for the small remnant of God, or God's children, who've remained faithful, all of it is compared to Sodom and Gomorrah. Jesus picked up on this same theme in the Gospels. He said it would be just like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember Lot's wife. Just get out. Just follow God. Just go after God. Don't go the way of the world, the way of the multitude. Verse 10, it says, hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. This was written, of course, long after Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. So leave aside for a moment what Jesus said in the New Testament, but what is Isaiah the prophet getting at here? He's addressing, I talked yesterday about the duality of these prophecies. Isaiah 30 and verse 8, I went through that on Friday last week. How that this book is for the last days. God wanted him to write it in a book because it needed to be preserved for our time. And so here is an end time prophecy. I'll leave it to you to understand where the Israelites of today are situated on this earth. Not just the people of Judah, not just the one tribe that is the Jews, but where are the lost tribes of Israel? You can go through that study in the United States and Britain in prophecy, but how clear here the prophet Isaiah says that in time Israel, I'll just cut to the chase, that's primarily the United States and Britain. In time Israel, God likens our nations to Sodom and Gomorrah. Now that's not good. That's not good. That's not a compliment. It's like I've said the last couple programs. God sends a prophet to warn. God sent Isaiah the prophet to warn. He had his message recorded and canonized in Holy Scripture so that this warning could go out. In The Missing Dimension in Sex, Mr. Armstrong says, since it is a basic truism that a solid family structure is the foundational bulwark of any stable and permanent society, this fact means only one thing. Civilization, as we know it, is on the way down and out. Unless that great unseen strong hand from someplace soon intervenes and saves today's sick society. And it is sick. Isaiah says so. Isaiah prophesied that it would be. He gets into the upside-down family in the next couple of chapters, and this is what Herbert Armstrong was talking about. Well, that warning, as it came from Jesus Christ, you can find this in Luke 17, verse 26. It says, As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and the flood came and destroyed them all. So he compares our latter-day society to the days of Noah. And then in verse 28, he continues, "Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded." Now, obviously, these things in and of themselves aren't wrong, but it's how they were doing it. They were just consuming material things, carrying on with their lives, their parties, their lustful pursuits, and neglecting God and His Word, defiantly shaking their fist at God and at His inspired Word. And so God has to rain fire from heaven. He did in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah to get their attention. And they'll have their opportunity, of course, when they're brought up in the second resurrection, those people, those residents of Sodom and Gomorrah. And just as sure as the people who die in the tribulation will have an opportunity to come up later and finally experience what it's like to live in a godly society where there's no sickness and disease, whether physical or spiritual. That's all that we have time for, unfortunately. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email us, td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.